This is Eric from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and you're listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, hockey fans from around the world. I am Richard Cote, the producer of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. It is the second line edition of the podcast, and you know what that means. No, it's not where or where did my little dog go. It means I am joined by the publisher of ProHockeyNews.com, Lou Lafredo. Lou, how are you doing?
I am doing really well. As you know, that we only have one league still in action, and there are at least two games, but there are a max of three games. I am looking forward to this to the final end of the season. the final week of the 22-23 season, because I'm going to put my feet up, put my head back, and take a week-long snooze.
And you're hoping for the two games, not the three, right?
Yes, I'm hoping for the two. I can't help it. Yep.
Well, as a hockey fan, I am hoping for the three games because I want to milk this for as much as I can. And I will elaborate that as we get into the NHL news. Listeners, this episode of the Pro Hockey News Podcast is brought to you by My Custom Sports Chair. Head over to mycustomsportschair.com. Enter in code PHN15 to get 15% off your purchase of the sweetest reclining chair that you ever had with the Pro Hockey News logo on it. A little bit of a rant before we get into the minor leagues. As Lou had mentioned, one league has finished up. Another one is still going. I'll leave it at that for now until we get into those. Just kind of bringing in my professional work career into this podcast. And just something odd that happened earlier this week. I got the strangest press release while I was at work the other day. And for those of you who may not be, you know, close to news or know what a press release is, you know, companies will send out notes or updates or anything with like an event coming up. They'll send that to the newsroom for any consideration of possible coverage. Sometimes they'll send in something gimmicky to kind of get it to stand out a little bit. They're fighting for our attention. The other day, I got a press release from Green Giant, the vegetable canning, freezing, and just production company, to tell us that in a recent survey, corn has become America's favorite vegetable. And I kind of thought for a second, well, yeah, isn't it? Because corn is great. Maybe it's just because I have a wife who absolutely loves and obsesses over corn, but I like corn too. So I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Apparently it wasn't before. Now it officially is. But what they sent with that press release and with that letter alerting me to, Americans, preferred produce there, they sent me a can of sweet corn just randomly in a box with a letter saying it's popular. So thanks, Green Giant. I have a can of corn in my house now. Anyways, just wanted
corn,
to...
corn niblets, I bet.
They were kernels, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, kernels. I remember as a kid, and obviously that was a long time ago, we got corn niblets.
I mean, I guess as long as it's not creamed, which I don't mind creamed corn, but yeah, give me the whole kernels because, that's good. Yeah. Yeah. Just thought I'd share that because I just found that as slightly odd. All right. Moving on from that, how can we possibly follow that up? Yeah. I don't know. How about we talk about the Kelly Cup?
Sure.
We have a Kelly Cup champion for the 2022-2023 season. Lou, shall I give a drum roll? Do you want to alert our viewers as to who it is who won?
No, I'll do the drum roll.
At anybody's surprise, it was the Florida Everblades. Yes, they complete the sweep of the Idaho Steelheads. Not terribly shocking, given how the first three games started. I mean, the first game went to overtime, 3-2, Florida won. Second game, 5-3. I don't know if I'd call it a blowout, but that wasn't terribly close. Game three, a little bit closer, 1-0. But, Florida, they always put together such great teams to go deep in the playoffs. Idaho, felt like a favorite, but just the way sports were going this year, you can't really bet on the favorite. I just thought it was going to go more than four games. Idaho, unfortunately, loses game 4-3-4 against the Florida Everblades. Everblades, correct me if I'm wrong, this is like their, what, third Kelly Cup?
No, this would be their fourth. Second Kelly Cup. In a row.
That is correct.
Yeah.
So congratulations to the Florida Everblades on your 2023 Kelly Cup championship. Enjoy it, because we had a couple of other teams from the Florida region who were not as lucky in multiple sports. Also, you know, another team in hockey and one more team in basketball. I was a little close to that one for the last week or so. But Lou, I want to get your reaction on the four games that we saw in the Kelly Cup playoffs. I mean, am I wrong? Did it really seem like that there was, like after the first game or so, did it feel like there really was going to be a lot of competition from Idaho?
Well, the first thing I thought of was, you know, they lost the first two games against Utah Grizzlies in that series. Both of those games went to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And they were down 0-2, but, you know, obviously roared back, winning four games.
Oh, no, the first two games ended in regulation. It was the last four games that went to overtime.
The last four games went into overtime. And I thought, well, you know, Steelheads still have a chance here. It is a seven-game series. But they came out and I thought laid an egg in game two. And then game three, that 1-0 win by Florida was just, somebody put the pin in the balloon. And it was quickly deflated because I don't think Idaho had any chance of coming back in that series. And obviously they didn't, but I don't know that they packed it in, but it came close.
Yeah, it really seemed like penalties is what killed Idaho in that 1-0 loss, giving Florida four chances on the power play. It just, you know, when you're fighting for your season there, you can't give a lopsided advantage to a really good, historically good team in the playoffs like Florida is. Right. And Idaho only managed to get one power play in that game as well. So, you can't give those opportunities to a team who you're chasing in the playoffs.
Right. But, as we talked about through a number of the second line episodes, the Steelheads motored through the playoffs right into the final. And you just had the feeling that it was going to be a seven game series.
Yeah.
And it's not a question that they didn't show up. It's, you know, let's put it this way. I don't know that Idaho lost as much as the Florida Everblades just dominated and won this series out on their own.
Yeah.
It wasn't a loss as much as a complete dominant win.
And that 1-0 loss, as I had mentioned, you know, Florida had four power plays in that game. That is the only game that they had more power plays than Idaho.
Hmm.
Idaho, you know, took that statistic in the other three games. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, a little disappointing performance from Idaho, but, you know, playoff hockey is playoff hockey. You can't bet on, you know, regular season production as we saw in the NHL, as we saw in the AHL, and pretty much down every league. If it's always going to be the favorite who's going to win, you know, what's the fun in sports? Right. That's why they play the game.
I was going to say, we are going to talk about that with the NHL and the AHL is coming up next, and a very similar story there. So,
yeah, absolutely. Let's take a look at the AHL. We have the Calder Cup playoffs still going on. Calder Cup final between the Coachella Valley Firebirds and the Hershey Bears. This one, the first two games, blowouts, absolute blowouts.
Yep.
But Hershey has come back to tie the series at 2. If you've missed it, I'll catch you up here. Game one, Coachella won 5-0, won game two, 4-0. And then game three goes to overtime. Hershey wins 5-4. And the last game, which was last night, as we record this on Friday, June 16th, Hershey wins game four to push to a game five. And as Lou said, you know, we're going to have at least two games out of this series, a maximum of three. So let's take a look back at the first few games, Lou. What do you think was the big change between games two and three for Hershey as they, you know, fight to continue the playoffs here?
Well, certainly to get back on home ice, and the way the schedules have been working, it's been 2 days off between some of these dates. So you had, what was it, Tuesday and Thursday of this week is when games three and four were played, but there were multiple days in between games two and three. So a couple of things happened. Number one, the Hershey Bears got back in onto home ice. And the second thing is that once they were on home ice, they managed to solve Joey Decord, who is the number one goaltender for the Firebirds. He's the one who pitched the shutouts, saved 25 of 25 in that game one. And so they were dominant performances by the Firebirds on home ice. That's a long trip back from coast to coast. And, you know, who knows? The Firebirds didn't do that much traveling, you know, over the course of the season. Maybe they were tired, but that shouldn't have kept them from being a little bit more competitive in game four. I don't know that they put – I mean, look, it's close. It's 3-2, but Hershey had control of that game, I think, from start to finish. So now, you know, tied, the ever critical game five in a tied series. It's a best of three series at this point going forward. Hershey has the upper hand. They've won two in a row, but look, the Firebirds were up against some really tough teams this regular season. They took down the Calgary Wranglers, who were the number one team in the West, and did it handily. And so I still look for Steve Rusin will kill me by saying this. He's our beat writer and shooter in Hershey. But I still think the Firebirds take this series because they are going home for games six and seven regardless.
Right.
Or at least game six.
At least game six. Yeah. Since it is a best of three series from here on out, I mean, Coachella does have home ice advantage if – you know, if every home team wins, as we've seen in this series, I mean, that's going to be the way it swings. Hershey's going to have to steal one on the road. And just going by the beginning of the series, you know, Hershey doesn't fare well in Coachella Valley.
Apparently
so, yeah, right. if you can keep them to less than, I don't know, three goals, you might have a chance. But when the Firebirds are at home, it's tough for them to, you know, to keep them under three goals.
Right.
But yeah, no, I'm kind of getting that feeling as well. It seems to be this is a true home ice advantage. Decord is going to have to, you know, figure out what exactly is going on because those first two shutouts were phenomenal. That was a good performance put on by him. Right. And we know goalies hit slumps, you know, happens every time in the playoffs. First two games, first game he faced 25 shots, second game 33 shots. You know, it's a few, but it's not, you know, outstanding. It's not a not an absurd amount of shots, but right. Yeah, I think once he kind of figures out what's going on, I think the Coachella Valley Firebirds have this wrapped up.
I do too. I really, somehow or another, I think he will regain that form from the rest of the playoffs and just get back to it. Because that 5-4 decision, it was, again, 25 saves on 30 shots. So he was pedestrian, let's say, in game three.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to bring something in from the first line that we talked about last week, because Lou, I absolutely need your take on this. The Firebirds jerseys. I'll say I gave my opinion last week. If you didn't happen to hear it, I want to get your thoughts on this, just because we had a pretty good discussion. And we had a pretty unanimous decision on it, but I want to get your honest, untainted view of the jerseys that the Firebirds have been wearing.
Okay, so just give me a second. What I'm doing is going to Steve Rusin's coverage of the game from game four.
Yep.
And I am taking a look at his shots from the game. I like them. These are the away whites.
The away jerseys. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So the away whites are fine by me. I like them because they're simple.
Right.
Now, so tell me.
Okay.
Tell me why I'm wrong.
Adam
is frequently telling me why I'm wrong. So why don't you jump in on the...
So, I mean, our consensus was obviously the white jerseys were better than their home jerseys, their dark navy blue jerseys. Oh. The one issue that we had with them, and I don't know if you're seeing them in those shots, there is a slight pinstripe of teal at the bottom of the sleeves and the bottom of the jersey. It just feels out of place.
Oh, I love it. Because the rest of the jersey, well, I don't know what the teal, what that color means, except pulling it in from the Kraken.
Yeah.
The first thing I noted from Steve's images from game three was I kept looking at it and looking at it and thinking to myself, well, wait a minute, there's a hint of Anaheim Ducks in that teal, in the inclusion of the teal, because the Ducks uniforms also have an accent color. And it was, for me, it was reminiscent of the Ducks, but I'll be honest with you. I think it's just spot on. I think it completes the jersey, because the rest of the jersey is pretty basic colors, you know, from the Coachella Valley Fire, Burning Man or whatever, you know, you know, all of that stuff and the heat of the desert, that sort of thing. And yet you've got this cooling bit of teal. And now I'm getting into, you know, I'm getting in way over my head. But I like it. It really struck me, because now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to the game three picks that Steve did for us, and for some reason the teal came through much clearer in the game three images that he sent. And I'm looking at them, and particularly on one of the goals for Coachella Valley, and it just struck me when I was looking at it. I'm good with it.
I'd be more okay with that teal stripe if it was put somewhere else. Like right now, it just looks like it's kind of sitting in no man's land. And I understand the tie back to the parent team. You know, you got to have some sort of tie. I know that the eye of the Firebird is that teal color,
right?
But that the placement of that stripe just seems out of place. And maybe if they could put it between like the red and the orange on the sleeve, and maybe leave it out of the bottom. I don't know. It's not exactly eye catching. To me, it's more distracting.
Well, the bottom being on the bottom of the sleeve, it represents water.
Yeah.
So water is on the low side. Now I'm way over my skis now. But what I'm doing is I'm looking at a goalie shot from Steve, and I, you know what? I'm okay with it.
Okay.
You guys were strongly against it.
We weren't strongly against it. It was just that one part just seemed really out of place. So at okay. least my opinion is it was really out of place. Adam and Lonnie didn't really care too much for that teal color being there at all. I'd be okay if it was removed, but I understand you need a tie back to your True. Your parent team and maybe just move it somewhere else. Or yeah, I don't know. It was a little distracting for me. All right.
We're going to have a style session.
I mean, yeah,
maybe that's what we do over the summer.
Off season, you know, we're going to be coming up with some jersey talk in the off season. So
I hope so.
Stay tuned for that.
Yes.
All right. So even series in the Calder Cup playoffs, best of three from here on out. So we'll be following all the action on prohockeynews.com. You can get any updates there. If for some reason you're feeling a little nostalgic for the past Calder Cup champions, maybe head over to chicagowolfstore.com, enter in code PHN15 to get 15% off your purchase of maybe some leftover championship gear from the Chicago Wolves. All right. Let's talk NHL. As we know, this past week, the Stanley Cup playoffs wrapped up. We have a new champion, as we knew we would going into the series. So congratulations to the Vegas Golden Knights, the 2023 Stanley Cup champions. Did it in very decisive fashion, especially game five. Lou, I want to get your reaction here on this final. Going in, I was really excited because we had two hard-hitting teams, two high-scoring teams. And in the end, it felt like we only got one high-scoring team. What are your thoughts on the matchup that we saw this year in the Stanley Cup Final?
Well, first of all, I don't like the war references and that sort of thing with sports, but this Stanley Cup Final, well, the Stanley Cup playoffs and the final were a battle of attrition. And Matthew Tkachuk apparently played at least one game with a broken sternum.
Yeah.
He was dressed by his teammates for game four, and he could not get dressed for game five at all, even with help. So you had that. You had Ekblad, who needs shoulder surgery, and he played the final series with a broken foot. So you've got those two that are less than 100%. And I really do think that the Golden Knights managed to keep themselves as healthy as possible over the playoffs and the Stanley Cup final. And they presented a very difficult problem for the Florida Panthers, who were just outmanned in the end.
Yeah.
And had no answers because their leadership on and off the ice was hobbled or not on the ice for game five. And obviously the score showed it.
Yeah. I gotta say, as a casual fan, I was a little let down in this series. Anytime that there's a sweep or a gentleman's sweep, especially when I don't have a dog in the race, I feel a little let down, especially when it comes to playoff hockey, because it is so entertaining to watch. No matter who's playing, the more games you get to see, just the better and better it gets. In the end, I felt like, you know, Vegas did have the advantage, at least going into this series, and even being down 2-0. I know that Florida had the capability of coming back as they did in the first round against Boston,
right?
Being down 2-1 in that series and also in this series as well. They weren't bad. It was the Boston series. They were down 2-0. They were down 2-1 in this series. Right.
They were down 3-1 to Boston before coming back on the full rally.
Right.
But to your point, once they got the first win on home ice, I thought for sure they were going to come back and tie the series in game four. I really did. And yet the Golden Knights just elevated their game you know, and it wasn't like they elevated it just enough to win. They went above and beyond, and that game was over. And then I think I really thought the series was over then. I was unfortunately thinking it was going to be a 5-game sweep.
Yeah. That's my thought. Like anytime I don't really have investment in either team, I want to see the most hockey I can see. You know, it's just always so much fun.
It's why I watch the UK games.
Exactly.
I don't have an investment in anyone except my grandparents who are from Ireland. So I tend to root for Belfast. But aside from that, it's just, isn't it fun to watch hockey when you're not, when your anxiety is non-existent?
Right. You can sit back and just enjoy watching the spectacle that is the game.
Right.
All right. So, Lou, I want to throw a quote at you that came out this week. Mm. And because I know I'm going to get a good reaction out of this. There was a certain Golden Knights player who was asked about the championship and recalled his days back in Toronto and said, "You guys said I couldn't win. Now I'm a 3-time champ. Remember that." Do you recall who said that this week?
My head was going someplace else. I remember reading the quote.
A Mr. Phil Kessel
mentioned
that.
Right, right.
I don't know how tongue in cheek that was meant to be. I just want to get your reaction to that quote.
Well, so you know how I feel about Phil Kessel,
right.
But inside that quote is a statement of fact. He's a 3-time Stanley Cup winner. He has his name on the trophy 3 times. You know what? He can say that.
He sure can.
You know what? And I'm good with it.
Yeah.
Congratulations to him.
Yeah. I mean, you can say what you want about the guy. He knows exactly what he was getting into when he had said that. He played the first series against Winnipeg, I believe, and hadn't played since.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, anytime you get your chance, you get the chance to put your name on the cup, I think should be celebrated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
what a way to mention that.
Right. So just as an aside on that, it was interesting seeing all of the players fully suited to skate the cup around, you know, all the injured players. I mean, Kessel hadn't played since the first season. He was fully geared up.
But he was a healthy scratch.
No.
He was a healthy scratch for this entire series.
Oh, so he had recovered to that point.
Mm-hmm. He had recovered. Right. They just had not put him back in.
Okay. So, but Lauren, what is it, Bossert?
I believe Foley. So.
Yeah. He was fully geared up to skate the cup around.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see, you know, was it 3 or 4 goaltenders were on the ice? You know, it was, you know, 40 guys were out on the ice sharing the cup, which is, you know, no, I'm not begrudging anyone, but I found it amusing.
And another individual who gets to put his name on the cup, I believe he was on the postseason roster, Mr. Jonathan Quick also.
Well, he was the backup.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the backup, and Alec Martinez. Both of them won their third cups.
Yeah. So now I'm going to bust out a serious question here. Looking at the contracts for next season with the Golden Knights, I'm going to start out with my original question. What are the chances, Lou, that you think that Vegas has to repeat?
You know, I've been thinking about this because I did read where they are favored to repeat.
Because the reason I throw this out here, I was doing a little bit of research, you know, coming into this. And since 2000, so in the last 23 years, we've had 12 different teams win the Stanley Cup. So I think odds are that we could see maybe not a back-to-back repeat, but in the next few years, there's a good chance we could see Vegas win a second Stanley Cup.
Well, they know how to put a team together.
They do.
So, yes. So you know, we've had this discussion how many times? Are they going to make the difficult decisions to improve and build on this foundation, consider this team the foundation and springboard into the next championship? They've certainly shown that they can do it. Go to the final in the first year, and then, you know, 5 years later, they're skating the cup around. I don't think that it will take them 5 years to win another cup.
No.
McCrimmon and McPhee in Vegas, I think, will make all of those necessary moves to ensure that there is a repeat at some point. But your original question, I honestly don't see them winning it two years in a row. It's such a difficult task to ask.
It is. But also, I was looking at their roster for next season. Just about the entire core of this team is signed on for next season.
Right.
They're going to have three UFA forwards, including Phil Kessel, next season. They're going to have one RFA defenseman next season. And they have three goaltenders who will be UFAs, including Aiden Hill, who I believe, if they want to bring him back, he just earned himself a big pay raise.
I'm going to bring up a name.
Okay.
As a counterpoint to your nothing against Aiden Hill, but I bring up the name of Jordan Binnington.
Yep.
Who had a lights out playoff run to St. Louis, taking their first Stanley Cup ever. And he has been not mediocre, but inconsistent. Hill came up out of the Tucson Roadrunners, the AHL affiliate for Arizona Coyotes. Mm-hmm. Did not start off the season in any sort of spectacular fashion, but he stepped in the playoffs and just took control.
Well, he had that 1 year with the Coyotes in the 2021 season.
Yeah.
Then he went to San Jose, where he played two and a half seasons.
Right.
Where he was making about $2.1 million a year.
With a crappy team in front of him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then he gets traded to the Vegas Golden Knights. And I think this is where he was showing what he's capable of. I don't know if it's going to be something like a $5 or $6 million a year deal, but I think he's put up numbers in the postseason and he's shown his potential with the Golden Knights, where he could be making double what he just made this past season. And I think the Golden Knights would be okay with that.
I don't disagree. My only concern is you just don't want to invest big money in a potential flash in the pan.
No.
That's all. I'm just thinking about this from a business point of view.
Right.
You know, and non-emotional. This guy just won you the cup by making unnecessarily spectacular saves, particularly in the final. You know, our cover guy in Vegas was Jack Lima, and Jack caught that paddle save that Hill made. And Jack was on the right side of the correct side of the ice, which happened to be, I think, on the right side. and caught Hill diving back to his right and making that save. That and that save, I think that save really turned the series.
Yeah.
It really, you know, that was equivalent to the Caps winning the cup in Vegas's first visit.
Yep.
And who was it? It was
Holtby.
Holtby made that spectacular save, not dissimilar to this one, that ruined, I think, Vegas's emotional investment in that series. And Hill's save buoyed Vegas, I think, right to the win.
Yeah. I mean, as you'd brought him up before, Jordan Binnington having a great postseason, gets a 6-year, $6 million a year deal with the St. Louis Blues. At the time seemed like, you know, a good deal. I'm thinking Vegas is going to offer Hill something similar in a length of contract, but I see it being more of around in the ballpark of like a $4 million, like doubling what he had before. And I think that would still be a good price for what you get.
I would see, I would do shorter and go 5+.
Okay.
I would go 2 years and do 5+. And then with the, I think you just have to be honest with people and say, look, you know, Vegas is salary heavy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So why spread it? You know, we could talk about how many other contracts, the Devils released one 8-year announcement today. It's like, why are we doing 8-year deals?
Yeah, right.
You know, so give Hill 2 to 3 years. It's recognition of what he did, but it's also recognition of, you know, we don't know that you're going to be able to do this again. It's nothing personal. It's just a business decision.
It is.
So anyway.
I mean,
so you're thinking 6 years.
I'm thinking 6 years, $4 million a year. And yeah, that would take you to when he's 33. So he, at that point, I mean, he's still a at least maturity wise and, you know, a physical sense, he would still be a viable option to be your starter.
Absolutely. I look, yeah, in the old days, goalies didn't come in to the number one slot until their late 20s.
Yeah.
They had to spend an awful lot of time in minors and riding the bench before they were able to crack in. But now, I mean, you've got 18, 19-year-old goalies stepping up. But look, Hill was terrific. I'm not taking anything away from him, but I think from a business and prognostication point of view, give him 3 at 4.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, obviously they're going to have to make a deal at some point here in the near future because he is a UFA going into next season. And what a story that would be if you let your Stanley Cup winning goaltender go because you didn't want to re-sign him. I mean, not that that has ever happened in recent memory, Kemper. Thanks, Abs. That was a great move, right? Yeah. Anyways, speaking of contracts and, yes, you know, wheelings and dealings in the off season, now that we are officially in the off season, a big name to come out into the free agency pool here. Omar Ekman-Larsson has now parted ways with the Vancouver Canucks. They bought out the final 4 years of his contract, meaning he is going to be officially a free agent. A free agency starts, what, July 1st?
July 1st.
Okay. So he will be on the market and available. You know, decent player. I think there are plenty of teams who could use an Ekman-Larsson. But, I mean, we got to finish up the draft first, which is coming up here in a couple of weeks. Lou, you're a little bit closer to, you know, following the Canucks. You write about them quite a bit, and I know you wrote about this particular development as it happened yesterday on Thursday. What were your thoughts? Where do you think the Vancouver Canucks are going when they're parting ways with players like this?
So the first thing is loosening up salary cap, although those 4 years, there's a percentage of those 4 years that count against the cap. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
I believe so.
So they've effectively wiped out a significant percentage of that annual, that AAV. They've got to be in a rebuilding mode, getting rid of what they consider dead weight and what their fans consider dead weight. And this is where, you know, business and emotional investment come together. And Ekman Larson is off looking for another team.
Yeah.
It fits with what they did starting at the trade deadline in March. Mm-hmm. Bo Horvat going. I still think JT Miller is gone.
Oh, okay.
Something tells me that JT Miller is going to wind up in a Rangers uniform again.
Okay.
Something about it. I don't know how happy he is there, and I don't know how successful Rick Tocchet is going to be in a second year if the Canucks are starting to slough off overpriced talent.
I mean, that's going to be quite the move for them to shear off with JT Miller. He's under contract at $8 million a year until the end of the 2029-2030 season.
See what I mean? Why do you do this?
About to call him a kid. This kid is 30 years old. I know he's not really a kid, but
not anymore. Right.
Not anymore. But by the end of his contract, you know, he's what, going to be 36?
Sure.
So.
And overpaid. I like JT Miller. I liked him when he was with the Rangers, and I like his play with the Canucks. Mm-hmm. But he's not worth $8 million a year. I'm sorry. It's just, it makes no sense. And for 8 years, and what do you want to guess? He's got a limited move clause or limited no move.
He does have a no move clause that starts starting at in July of 2027, he can submit a 15 team no trade list. So he's got a little bit of protection after the 2027 season. So he got 4 years of not being able to be traded.
Right.
He would have to waive that, which I suspect he would if he just pays attention to what's happening around him there in the locker room.
Right. Because here's my thing, and I would put this question to you. Would you build a team around JT Miller?
I don't know if I'd build a team around JT Miller.
No.
The Canucks definitely dug themselves into a little bit of a hole here. Just looking at his time with the Canucks, last season, the 2021-2022 season, was his career high in points at 99, which I believe was right after that season when they signed him to this deal.
Right.
He followed up with 82 points. Not bad.
No.
That's solid production in 81 games. That's more than a point per game. But I don't think that's $8 million worthy for that season.
No.
He's really, with that contract, he's put himself in a tough position to be moved, because even if he does waive that no trade clause, I don't know if there's a team in the NHL who would take on a contract for the next, what, six seasons?
Except now you've got Vancouver potentially buying out or having to absorb how much of that $8 million in order to get rid of them.
Right.
You can't rebuild if you're shelling out $8 million to a single player over the next 6 years, right?
Right.
So it just doesn't happen. JT Miller is not there for much longer. He'll be pressured into doing something. They certainly can't buy it out.
I was going to say, yeah, they can't buy it out. And even if they did a 50% salary retention, that's $4 million a year. That's basically dead cap for the next 6 years.
And they're back into a position with the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah.
This is the last year, I think, for their
cap. Oh, yeah, they're two –
Parisi
two buyouts. And, yeah.
I'm forgetting the second one. So
Suter. Yep. So let's see. No. Well, this is next year is going to be the last big season for them for their payout because they got $14.7 million this year that they paid out, $14.7 million next year. And then it's going to drop significantly after that to $1.6 million for the next 4 years, I believe.
God, just staggering. See, this is the kind of stuff that I don't understand. And you have New Jersey that drops 8 years, $64 million on Jesper Bratt today. I'm sorry. It's just crazy.
Yep. So, I do not know what's going on in the mind of the front office of the Vancouver Canucks right now, because I mean, you just made you put out a highly valuable player who you probably could have gotten a decent amount for him. Even, you know, I don't know if he had what sort of movement clause he had in his contract. But you probably could have gotten something decent for him. Instead, for the next 4 years, you're paying out about $8 million, which is going to, you know, hit you. See, how much is that going to be a season? Starting next year, about $2.3 million.
Right.
And then the year after that, $4.7 million is going to be your cap hit with that buyout. I'm not sure what exactly, you know, they're doing when they're thinking about rebuilding when they just don't have the money to do it.
Right.
But maybe they're hoping for a bunch of entry-level contracts that will mature by the time this dead cap is gone.
Right.
Who knows?
You could have traded him away for a fifth-round pick or something, get something back.
They're loaded with fourth-round picks this year.
Hmm.
But, yeah. I don't know. We'll continue monitoring that. If you'd like to follow us, prohockeynews.com. We'll have the latest developments in the off-season contract buyouts, which will be in a frenzy as we head towards free agency at the beginning of July. So that does it for what's going on in the world of hockey right now.
Yes.
I would put out our picks of the week, but really we only have one series going. We have possibly three games left. So I'm just going to toss it to you, Lou. Who wins the Calder Cup?
Firebirds. Firebirds in seven. Firebirds going all the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think Hershey steals one at home or steals one on the road. I think Hershey's going to win in six.
Wow. So you got them winning tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night and on Monday, June 19th.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
So I have a question though, my friend.
Okay. Go ahead.
So to whom am I sending this?
Oh, yeah, we will be getting to that when we get us all together.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We'll be announcing the winner and where the Bear Trophy will be going. We didn't officially name it, did we?
No, not yet.
Okay. All right. We'll
I was thinking something along the lines of the America's Cup.
Okay.
So the first year, it's going to remain the PHN PHN Picks trophy.
Okay.
And if you were to win the trophy,
mm-hmm.
This year, you would have an opportunity to rename it to the Richard Cote Trophy.
Okay.
If you win it the second year. That's how America's Cup goes.
Okay, so the winner gets to name it.
Yes.
All right.
After they've won it the second year.
Okay. So I'll keep the Adam Minnick Memorial Trophy in mind when I win it next year as well. Okay.
And so keep in mind, it stays that if you were to lose the next year, it's okay. Still the Adam Minnick Memorial
Trophy for at least one more year.
Right.
Okay.
No, two.
2 years. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I've been thinking about this.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll keep milling over some thoughts on potential names for the trophy. We'll have to put out some pictures of the trophy on social media once it's awarded.
Yes.
We'll have that coming up soon. We'll be doing all of our postseason wrap up here in the next week. So we'll get the whole gang together for that, and it will just be a glorious time. All right. That takes us to our parting shots. Lou, what's on your mind this week?
So I'm going to take a parting shot at Adam, our illustrious host of the first line, because Adam goaded me into a Twitter conflict with him over Jack Eichel. And so first of all, Adam has no idea who Emperor Palpatine is.
I'm sure he does.
Which is terribly disappointing, but he said he didn't in his Twitter thing to me.
Oh.
But to your surprise, I think, I am going to say congratulations to Jack Eichel.
I know
your back teeth almost swallowed your back teeth. I said that what Jack Eichel needed was a mature team that wasn't going to take anything from him on or off the ice or in the locker room. I think the Vegas Golden Knights ended up being the perfect place for him. I think they provided a maturing environment for him so that he said all the right things. He didn't drop a Phil Kessel on anybody. I thought he was just humble enough. Winning the cup, and congratulations to Jack Eichel and Phil Kessel. So that's my parting thought.
All right. Mine is also going to stay somewhat Jack Eichel related here. So I got to say, I feel a little bit for fans of the Buffalo Sabres. As we have seen in the past few years, we've seen players who were beloved in Buffalo get traded and then go on to win the Stanley Cup with another team. Jack Eichel, Ryan O'Reilly, just to name the last two who have done that. So I feel for them a little bit. You had this great talent, but you didn't have a coach or a front office to be able to put that together and figure out how that's going to work for that club. As frustrating as it can be, nothing is forever. So Sabres fans, keep that in mind going forward. And I, you probably know better than anybody else in the NHL. There's always hope next season. So let's looking forward to next season and to the upcoming draft. For Lou Lafredo, I am Richard Cote. Everybody, listeners, thank you for making us a part of your routine. And hopefully we will have the entire staff on hand for a postseason wrap-up next week. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Pro Hockey News Podcast.